Hello there, Podcast Land. This episode of the Behind the Barricade podcast is sponsored by Podcast Texts. Podcasters, do you want to expand your podcast reach to 360 million, maybe even more people? Do you want to make your podcast searchable on Google, Yahoo, even Ask Jeeves? Then look no further than Podcast Texts. You can increase your podcast reach exponentially. You can also reach the deaf and hearing impaired. They can read your podcast. It's unbelievable the amount of ways Podcast Text can help you. Maybe you have a few links you'd like to include. Not a problem. You can include them thanks to Podcast Texts. Seem too good to be true? Visit PodcastTexts.com to create a more dynamic user experience for your audience today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Behind the Barricade podcast, and here are your hosts, John O'Connor and Daniel Tao.
Hello and welcome everybody to the Behind the Barricade podcast. My name is John O'Connor. Like always, I'm with Daniel Tao, and we have reached episode number 71 of this thing we call the podcast. Today, we are joined by Tanner Allen. He is the new singer of New Jersey post-hardcore band Youth in Revolt. We talk about their upcoming Outer Loop Records show on November 17th at the studio at Webster Hall. We talk about their new LP called The Broken, which is out January 20th. Also on Outer Loop Records. We talk about cover songs, and we talk about a whole bunch of other things. So, anyways, like always, thank you guys so much for liking us on Facebook, for following us on Twitter, for liking our Instagram page. If you haven't already, subscribe on iTunes, give us a review, give us a rating, help us out there. And that's about it. So, here it is, episode 71. Myself talking with Tanner Allen of Youth in Revolt right now.
It's so strange and feels and feel this way for you. There's something the way you move, something the way you move. If you never heal, then it's right through and through. There's something the way you move. I don't know what it is you do.
All right, there we go.
Yeah.
What's up, man?
Hey, not a whole lot. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's actually quite cold in New Jersey right now. Where are you calling from?
Oh, cool. Calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan. So.
Oh, shit. It's probably way colder there.
No, actually, surprisingly, it's really sunny. So, but give it a month and it'll be miserable. So.
Definitely. Especially, you're close to like a Great Lake, right? Or a few of them. I'm not too sure.
Yeah. We're like 30 minutes from Lake Michigan. Which is the one that goes, like, all the way to Chicago.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so that, like, whenever it snows, a lot of times we'll get way more snow because of, they call it lake effect snow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's fun stuff in the winter.
Yeah, it's like that whole surrounding area, and like, including Buffalo. Like, Buffalo gets fucking, like, whacked with a whole bunch of snow. And I think it's because of that lake effect.
Yep, yeah. The last time I was going through Buffalo, actually, with my old band Brightwell, the show got canceled, and we had, like, a huge shipment of merch that was at the venue in Buffalo.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and so, like, it got canceled, and we didn't go there, and then it took us, like, 3 months to round up, like, $400 worth of that merch.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy, but...
You couldn't have fucking scheduled it like in Tampa, Florida or somewhere warm.
I know, right? Somewhere where things don't happen like that.
Was the merch ended up getting screwed up at all, or was it just fine?
No, the merch was fine. It was just sitting at the venue, and then it went. They sent it back to the post office, like the government. It was like the USPS.
Yeah, yeah.
And we couldn't get a hold of them, so we eventually needed to find like a friend in Buffalo to go to USPS, get our merch, and ship it to a different venue.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it was really just a great situation to deal with.
Jesus Christ, man. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize how crazy touring is, especially when you have that planned out. Like, you start off with a shit ton of merch, and then maybe if you're having a great week, you know, all that's gone, and you still have, like, another month full of touring. So people, people don't realize that, you know, it's not like they could just go to a random shop and just pick up their merch, you know?
There's a whole bunch of behind-the-scenes, like, scrambling fiascos going on to make yourself look like you're put together when you're at the venue.
Yes, well, I mean, that's one of the prices to pay for touring, but, you know, as long as you love doing it, then fuck it, why not?
Absolutely.
So, anyways, you are now in Youth in Revolt.
Yes.
Like you haven't heard that already. It's like, yeah, oh, really, am I? Wow.
This is news to me.
Yeah, really. How's that been going so far?
It's been going great. The guys have just been the best, like, since we started. And, you know, it's always weird, especially a vocalist change for a band. It's kind of an intimidating thing to approach, being the new vocalist. And it's been awesome. Like, anywhere from a lot, or at least for the most part, of the fans of the band have seemed to receive the new stuff pretty well. And the members of the band themselves have been just nothing but absolute, like, goofballs from day one, which is good, and it's important.
Oh yeah, you can't be 100% about business. You gotta have fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome that you mentioned that the fan support has been through the roof. I mean, there's a lot of bands out there that have like they have like some mediocre fans, and then you have some like Pierce the Veil or Sleeping with Sirens that like would kill themselves because of the band.
Yep. Yeah, that is. That's probably not far from the truth, especially for those two bands.
Yeah, really. I mean, I think the craziest thing I've ever seen a fan of a band do was, do you remember when Zayn Malik left One Direction?
Yep.
There was a couple photos going around with people like slitting their wrists in like ways that says I'm sorry Zayn, or please stay Zayn. Like literally, like blood's running from their arms. Like some of the creepiest shit. Over a boy band.
Yeah, that's can't say I recommend that, but teach their own, I guess, you know?
Okay, so there wasn't any when you decided to join the band, right?
No, thank okay. God. There was none of that.
Jesus Christ.
But yeah, so it's been a pretty smooth transition, it seems like. I mean, of course, you have a couple people that – I mean, there's no way for me to say that True wasn't a good singer, because he was a really talented dude.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a natural like expectancy, like from me and the rest of the band, obviously, that, you know, some people are going to love it and some people are going to not receive it as well. And that's just kind of the way it goes.
Yeah. And then you have the assholes on YouTube that just hate it no matter who's singing.
yeah. Right.
God almighty. Do you actually read YouTube comments, or do you stay as far away from it as like the fucking plague or something?
It depends on the day. To be honest, I like for Youth in Revolt, I've been reading a lot of them, just because, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's something having to do with like the new singer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, just because it's interesting, and you know, I guess over the years I've built up a callus on that kind of thing. So, you know, regardless of anything, you're gonna get those people that are commenting saying like, oh yeah, this guy's a fucking idiot, blah blah blah. Like, regardless of if you're a new singer, if you're a singer in a band that's been around for 20 years, like, that's just a thing. So it's, I don't know, it's just interesting reading and seeing how it's being received on an average level, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I wonder why bands, fans just don't accept it. Like, going back to like a band like Suicide Silence, where Mitch unfortunately passed away and Eddie Hermeda came in and started doing vocals. A lot of people are like, yeah, Mitch is better. I'm like, well, I'm
guessing he was. It's two different style vocalists, but you're not going to get a new song from Mitch. So it's either you go with it or you just leave him alone. But
yep, exactly. Like, and I mean, that's, yeah, like you said, that's just kind of the way that it is. Like, it'd be great, for example, if one thing that happened recently that I was really excited about is Anthony Green coming back to Seosin and doing stuff with them again. But at the same time, when they were doing stuff with Cove, I loved that too. It's, you know, it's a different band essentially, but a lot of the times it's just that's how it goes. People change members in bands all the time, and it's just kind of one of the sad truths of the industry.
Exactly.
Especially on our smaller level where, you know, 90% of the people that are in bands like this, you know, it's not like you're making $1 million. You're working in between tour and riding in a van and yeah.
But, wait, you're saying Youth and Revolt aren't millionaires? Really? Wow. Breaking news.
Right? Yeah. Call CNN on that one.
Yeah, really. They'll spin it. Don't worry. Next thing you know, it'd be like, Youth and Revolt supports Donald Trump. You're like, wait, whoa, 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 what the fuck just happened?
Hang on. Didn't go that far.
But funny you should mention, like, band members getting paid. There's a story that came out which features a band that was on Behind the Barricade before called Allegion. And they decided to do something with the new website or newish website, Patreon, where they, in agreement or, you know, for a certain price a month, you could like help support the band and you get like something cool out of it, like a Skype call or, you know, something like that. And then I see on Loudwire today, this one punk band I've never even fucking heard of called them out for being dickless or something like that, for, you know, relying on their fans to make money and shit like that. I'm like, wait a second, isn't that the whole point of being in the band, is, you know, relying on your fans? Without your fans, what the fuck are you doing it for?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, say something like a Skype call could suffice for, you know, say releasing a song that you would expect people to buy, which would be money for you also. So it's, you know, people are still paying for content.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's not something that I would do. I'm just saying, you know, I don't think that's like an evil ploy. That's probably just a way for them to stay on the road, because when you are a band on a lower level, say, you know, you can't tour 24/7 because then you're not going to have any money to do anything. And so, you know, like giving them the benefit of the doubt, that might have been their way of saying, hey, we want to keep giving you guys content and keep touring and stuff, but we're not making a whole lot of money as a band. So, you know, if you guys help us out, we help you out, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it's also kind of like ownership in the band. Like, I think we're heading towards that level where, you know, record labels are on their way out and more of like self, you know, self-funding and self-promotion is basically going to be, you know, it's going to take the place of a label. So, like, you could take a site like Patreon where someone could give you $100,000 a year and own like 51% of the band. Like, we're talking like stocks now in a band.
Yeah.
Like, that is fucking creepy how, you know, it's turning out to be that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's because of two things, and mainly, well, two primary things. Like, the main thing being that with technology nowadays, anyone with a really awesome work ethic and $1,000 can set up a home studio that can put out, you know, something that sounds pretty professional, as long as, obviously, they have the drive to get good at doing that. And then, like, on top of that, you have just this whole like switch up in how music is sold and marketed now.
Yeah.
With, you know, like 80% of kids, you can say, when's the last time you actually like bought a CD? And most of them probably couldn't remember the last time, because they have Spotify or Apple Music.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, or pirating, and it's just sort of, you know, that's the way it is. People can complain about it, but that's how it is, and that's how it's going to be. So there's this whole overturn in the industry about, you know, mainly the record labels that are forking out, you know, $30,000, $40,000 to $100,000 for a record, and then it's a record that's not really getting sold. Yeah. So they're essentially getting paid back in ad money. So I don't know. I think it's going to be a really funny couple of years kind of seeing how the industry responds to that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a weird time to be a band, and it's a weird time to be in the music industry. But I actually have an idea of how I think the future is going to turn out. Do you remember a couple of years ago when Jay-Z released his album on Samsung, and Samsung bought like a million copies of it?
Yeah, actually.
Yeah. So why can't these companies do that for smaller bands? Meaning, like, if Epiphone decided to go and say, okay, you know what? Youth and Revolt, I really like what you did with the Broken. I'm going to go and I'm going to buy out 100,000 copies of it. But it's not going to be sold on iTunes. It's not going to be on Spotify or anything. You're going to have to go to epiphone.com/youthandrevolt. You're going to have to watch a 30-second ad, and then you'll be able to get the music for free. So basically, Epiphone gets advertising money. You guys already get paid for 100,000 copies of it. And I think, and the user, like myself, listening, gets something for free, even though they're benefiting both Epiphone and Youth and Revolt.
Exactly, yeah. Which, I mean, that would be great. But, and I think that's definitely a possibility. For sure. Either that or just ramping up the amount of ad money for things like Apple Music and Spotify, because those are great. I use Apple Music myself, and it's just the amount of ad money that comes in a lot of times doesn't – and I'm not talking about us, for example. I'm talking about a lot of the times the like the bigger artists, like, you know, you're under The Weeknd and you're above Youth and Revolt.
Yeah.
Like people right around there where, you know, they're getting $150,000 for their record and they're just getting minimal ad money from it. And then their label gets mad and they still know it's a profitable band. And it's just this whole fiasco. Like there's just tons of horror stories about all that.
Yeah, really. Especially when a lot of like popular bands like 6AM are coming out against like YouTube and Apple Music and Spotify about not paying royalties enough, which I totally agree, because like for one stream on Spotify, you get like a 13th of a cent or something like that.
Yeah. It's when you look at it, like per view, it's a pretty ridiculous amount. It depends on what the exact – I'm not sure for – what was it, Spotify that you said?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the exact number is for that. But, yeah, YouTube, I think if it's – like if there are ads on it, if they watch the whole ad, you get like 20 cents or something. I don't know. It's pretty minuscule, but they're doing what they can.
Yeah, really.
And at the end of the day, you know, money is not why we do what we do.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and if your band gets big enough, you know, you're able to make ends meet if you're touring enough, so.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of bands still have side jobs when they go home. Like, they think, like, a band like, you can even take Seosin. I'm pretty sure most of them, I guess everyone but Anthony Green, has some sort of side job that they're doing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty common thing. And on top of that, you'd probably go crazy if you're a touring musician and just, you know, had 2 months at home with absolutely no obligations.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I mean, it's crazy to hear like some of the jobs that touring bands have. We just talked with Derek Blevins. He's a guitarist and clean vocalist of My Ticket Home. And he was saying how, I think he had like two or three jobs where, you know, one of them was like a sales job at Sprint, and another one was like working at a skate shop or something like that. Like, I mean, he's like extremely busy guy, and thankfully he found like two ways of income, you know, that he could put on hold when a tour comes around.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yep.
And that's the key, is somewhere that's cool with you leaving for a month.
Yeah, which isn't a lot of places. So.
Yeah.
So do you have a side job, or did you find a way to make music?
I have two, which like they amount to like full time. I'm not working like 80 hours or something like that. But I do like, I'm like a barback/server at this restaurant in downtown Grand Rapids called the Bull's Head, and then on the weekends I bartend at this arena called the Van Andel, which is like It's like the Grand Rapids Arena for, they do hockey and then they do a lot of the big concerts.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We have like Stevie Nicks and the Avett Brothers come in soon and stuff. And so, yeah, and it just kind of, you know, odd jobs.
So food industry for you, or more specifically the bar industry.
Yep. Yeah. And that's kind of something that's a little bit renowned for being okay with flexible hours.
Oh, absolutely. Because if you don't want your shift, there's about three other people that are going to go right in for it. So,
yeah. Worst case, if not, just put a couple beers out on the counter and leave for a month and the people can just come in and drink them.
On the honor system.
Yeah. Just kidding. Yeah. But it'd be nice.
Yeah, it's actually pretty funny. Like I know of like a lot of bands that do the bar thing, and a lot of them hate John Taffer with a passion.
Yeah?
Yeah. A lot of them say it's basically bullshit what he's doing. And I do agree with it because I do see like some of the horror stories for the bar owners. Are you familiar with the show at all, Bar Rescue?
Yeah. Like I've seen a couple episodes of it.
Okay, so you know the premise, like you have a failing bar, you know, shit's going crazy, the workers don't respect the boss, yeah, et cetera. This one guy, John Taffer, comes in, he turns the bar around, and next thing you know, there's, you know, profits through the roof. But the funny thing is, what they don't tell you on that show is that the bars have to pay for all the stuff that John brings in after like a year. So a lot of these bars shut down.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that part of it. That's pretty crazy.
So I mean, you can hear it like in the show, like at the final part where he's like discussing everything. He's like, I put in this POS system and you get 1 year free subscription. I put in this cooler thing that tells you the exact amount of liquor you have. And, you know, that's a year subscription. And the bar owners are like, wow, this is going to be great. You know, they're going to get so much business from Bar Rescue. We're on TV and shit like that. And they're not hearing that. Okay, it's for a year. And then after a year, I don't know exactly what the prices are, but it's enough to drive them out.
Yeah, well, and you know, you probably get that business for a couple weeks, maybe even a couple months, but you know, who's going to be, say, in that city and be like, oh yeah, that bar was on Bar Rescue 4 years ago, so let's go to that one.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that thing has a definite expiration date on it as far as like the popularity that you get from that.
Exactly.
But at least I would expect. I don't know.
Yeah. But I mean, there are a few bars in New Jersey that actually fell through the wayside because of John Taffer. So,
it's, wow, yeah. It's,
yeah.
Now, I used to live in Austin, and I was working at like this burrito place, and this was before I started touring in bands and stuff. I was in college at the time.
Yeah.
And someone came through that worked at one of the bars that was nearby, and he was just saying he was on that show Bar Rescue, and I was like, oh, which one is it? And he's like, I'm not like allowed to tell you now, but so I wish he told me that though, so I could go online and see if they were still around.
Yeah, chances are he's not working at that same bar.
Yeah.
Well, which is pretty fucked to think of, because you're putting blind trust into some guy who's just doing a TV show. And
yeah, it's 2016.
Yeah. So it's pretty funny that you mention Austin. Like, what kind of route did your whole childhood take? Like, did you go from Austin to Grand Rapids, or was there a place in the middle, or, you know, how was growing up?
It was awesome. But I actually grew up in Houston, Texas.
Okay.
So I was born there up until when I moved out when I was 17, either 17 or early 18. And I went to college in Austin. And I ended up living there for about 5 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've been in Grand Rapids for like two.
About. Okay.
So yeah, so I've been in Texas for pretty much my whole life. So this whole snow thing that's about to happen is still a new experience for me.
Definitely. So Longhorns, Aggies, what are you?
Oh, I went to Texas State, but okay. Longhorn supporter.
All right. Awesome, man. That makes two of us. I had cousins that went out there, so they brought back a shit ton of, you know, merchandise and stuff like that when I was a kid. I was like, I guess I'm a Texas fan.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Austin is to the date my favorite city in the U.S., hands down.
Yeah, and they have one hell of a music scene over there, too.
Yep. Yeah, it's incredible. There are even a bunch of my friends from, like, Houston and Dallas, San Antonio and Austin that are all doing like really well. Like I've got some friends from San Antonio. They're in a band called Backwards. And they're doing great right now. They're just on the up and up right now. But yeah, they're killing it. And then my friends from Dallas and Fit for a King are doing awesome.
Of course, Fit for a King, man.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be pretty huge within a matter of a couple of years. That's not even an issue. That they have something there where it's going to propel them. They just need like one or two more albums.
Yep, yeah, I think so. But fun fact, I actually filled in for them for a tour playing bass and singing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but they were like their guitarist Bob, they were just short a member and kind of in a pinch when they were looking for who ended up being Tuck.
Okay, yeah.
And so with like a 2-day notice, Bob hit me up and was like, hey, can you come on this 4-day tour? And I was like, yeah, of course.
So how many songs did you have to learn within a matter of 2 days?
Five, I think. I'm pretty sure.
All right, that's not too bad. I mean, it's still pretty crazy. Like, they're kind of songs. You know, it's not something like straight up easy. I mean, they're pretty technical.
Well, I was familiar with them also, so it's, you know, it was fairly simple. Yeah. But they're just a bunch of bands that I see. Also, Micah Relocate coming out of like Houston, their singers, like, well, actually both their vocalists are my really good friends, and I don't know. Oh, and Water Parks also. I like.
Yeah, they're getting one hell of a push.
They're getting huge too. Yeah, Austin's my bud, but.
And they're managed by, what was it, Benji Madden, right, or Joel?
I think all three. It's like all three of the Madden brothers kind of manage them. But I don't know. It's really cool because like I was in a local band when I was in Houston/Austin, and it's kind of cool seeing like my friends that were in that local scene all doing really well right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of bands fall to the wayside, but like you just mentioned, a couple bands that are really thriving and
yeah,
it's awesome seeing your friends succeed. You know, it just sucks that you're like, ugh, why is this band fucking succeeding? Like they put like a black eye on like your current scene. And you're like, ah, they're so much better than this shit.
Yeah, I've got a couple in mind. None that are my friends, but a couple bands in mind. I won't drop any names though.
Yeah, that's especially that case in New Jersey. Like, New Jersey has, like, one of the biggest scenes in the country. And, you know, I think they just rival maybe Ohio and California, where, you know, they, like, a lot of bands came out of there that you had no idea were from that area. So, like, you had, like, Census Fail come out. You had My Chemical Romance come out. You had the Gaslight Anthem come out. You have, I think, the Menzingers coming out. You know, the Early Novembers from New Jersey. You know, a lot of, like, pivotal scene bands come from New Jersey, yeah.
I did not know that all those bands are from New Jersey. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Not to mention...
I guess I should know that, because my band's from New Jersey. They should fill me in on this stuff.
Yeah, they kind of dropped the ball on that one. But... And New Jersey is not an easy place to succeed. I mean, there's a lot of venues out there, but there's also a lot of acts. And there's a lot of hungry ones, and there's a lot of, you know, part-time acts, as I like to call them.
Yeah, well, and that's another thing with, like, say, Austin, is there's so many great musicians in this one city. And it's awesome because it's so saturated. And from, like, a listener's perspective, anywhere that you go... You know, say you go and see a bigger band with local openers. The local openers are always great. Or say you go to a bar and there's like, you know, even something as left field as just like a jam band playing or something. They're also great. But that being said, you know, there's pretty much no way for them to stand out from these other people that are also great.
Yeah.
And it's great for the listener and kind of bad for the band. It's almost better to be somewhere like... say Ohio used to be where there wasn't so much like that. And then, you know, you get a couple great bands that break out because there's nothing else.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, not because there's nothing else, you know, because they're good, but there's nothing else to kind of combat that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Hawthorne Heights basically started it all. Like, they opened the gates for, you know, The Devil Wears Prada, you know, My Ticket Home's getting big. Even Attack Attack was from Ohio, right?
From Columbus.
Yep. So it's either you're in that Cleveland, Columbus, you know, Dayton area, like my friends in Danger Kids, another one that's getting pretty big. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's something in the water in Ohio, or there's really nothing else to do.
Yep.
So.
But, Well, and I guess, you know, say in something, again, like Ohio, where there are a bunch of successful bands now, probably a lot of people become friends with them, and it's kind of like because another thing about the music industry nowadays is it's a two-part system. You can be a really good band, kind of like going back to what I was saying about Austin, what mm-hmm. you were saying as well, where you can be really good and get no recognition because of that. So a very important part of finding success is knowing successful people or companies and being, you know, good at what you do.
Absolutely.
Which kind of sucks because sometimes it's hard to reach out to those people unless you have those connections. But that's kind of a secondary kind of downside of everything.
Yeah, but I mean, you need that downside, though. It basically separates the people that are going to be 100% serious and committed to, you know, like I said, the part-time bands.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, especially in an oversaturated market. But, you know, I think the one thing I can't stand about, like, some bands is when they jump on a trend where, you know, they start off as, like, a pop punk band, and next thing you know, like djent is really popular now. They're like, okay, we're going to be a djent band. You're like, really, motherfuckers? We know what you're all about. But a lot of them do it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, at least change the band name so it's like some people think it's a different band.
Yes. And please don't use the word like Skyline or, you know, some of those generic shit where it's like, all right, you have At the Skylines and you have Design the Skylines and you have this Skyline. It's like, all right, enough. We get it. You like Skylines.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. I'm a little bit split on that. Like, I totally agree that, you know, if you're a band, you know, you should stay to some extent the band that you started as. But at the same time, like, sometimes I see bands like, well, actually, to support like my first example, I'd say like a band like Sworn In.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, they started a really niche thing. And it was awesome, is awesome. And they are still doing that, even though kind of like that sort of trend has kind of passed over, like the, what you would say, I guess, the pop culture in that scene.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, they're still they're staying true to like what they did, you know, their art. That's awesome to me. And then on the flip side, I also think it's great when, you know, if you look at a band like Bring Me the Horizon, where every single record that they do is like, it could very well have come from a different band.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree.
Yeah. And I think that that's cool too. So it's kind of just like, but I guess in Bring Me the Horizon's case, you know, it's not like they're looking at the trends and being like, this is popular now. So
No, not at all.
So, I totally think it's stupid when bands are just like, all right, so these bands are on top, I'm going to do that. And then, you know, finish that album cycle. And they're like, all right, so now these bands are on top, so we're going to emulate that.
Yeah.
It's kind of...
But like, there's definitely a difference between progressing within albums like Bring Me the Horizon did, and then bands that just go from like one end of the spectrum to the next.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, those are the bands that I can't stand. The ones that, like I said, you know, start off as pop punk, and next thing you know, they sound like a Periphery ripoff. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. Hey, I totally agree with you on that.
Exactly. So now is your new album coming out on January 20th a ripoff of something, or is it still the true Youth in Revolt sound?
It's still it's not a ripoff of anything, and it's also a little bit different than, I guess, what the true Youth in Revolt sound would be, because that's a little bit lost in translation now. but it has a lot of the things that that the fans of Youth in Revolt previously, like of the Love is a Liar's Game EP, the things that drew them to the band. Like, there's still a lot of heavy, there's still a lot of screaming, and, you know, it's still the same band, but we did push for a little bit more of a rock, like, vibe. Just because we wanted to kind of, I don't know if this is a bad way to say it, but sort of grow up in a way.
No, I understand, yeah.
Yeah, and it sort of felt right, you know, kind of like less is more, sort of is a decent way to say it, I guess.
No, I completely 100% agree.
Yeah, where like, you know, focus less on, you know, a flashy guitar riff or, you know, doing something that's totally, absolutely insane and out there, and just make great songs and a great record.
You're making Youth and Revolt great again.
Hopefully.
Yes. Hopefully. Yeah. I mean, I just saw your video for The Broken and got a little, I hate to use the term futuristic, because this could happen within maybe like a year or two. Like, you never know when these robots are going to come up and like fucking, you know, take over the world. Like, we are coming towards that in a society, and like, no one really cares that much. But what was that?
Oh, I just said true.
Oh yeah. But I really enjoyed the music video. I couldn't imagine how long that fucking took.
it was kind of funny, I guess. My good friend Ned Ingles, he actually also lives in Grand Rapids, and he does a bunch of video work also. He does stuff for like my friends in Seraphim, who they're a local band around here, they're really good. Mm-hmm. And like, he did one for Traders, actually two for Traders, I'm sorry. But anyways, he's really good. And we had the band come to town for, because since I'm the only one from Michigan, they all came here and stayed in me and my girlfriend's apartment for like about a week. And so that was a fiasco. And I'm just happy I didn't get beat up by my girlfriend for having a bunch of dudes in our apartment.
Oh, God.
But anyways, yeah, it was awesome. We shot all the live shots, and then it wasn't until maybe about a month later that we ended up shooting all the B-roll stuff, which is like the story kind of frames.
Mm-hmm.
Which, because the band wasn't even there for that, and I just kind of called a bunch of my friends to come and help out, and so yeah, we actually got it done in maybe 3 days with the full band, and then one day with all the B-roll stuff. So it was, for how much footage we got, it was pretty simple.
Wow, that's really good. I mean, like, I hear like horror stories from bands that just even do a simple performance video where they have to play the song like 17 times in a row, and it takes like a week or two like of nonstop doing that. It's like, holy shit. And then you accomplish this, what seems to be like, you could even pass this off as like a little mini movie type of deal while you blend in, you know, your performance in it. And you did it all in 4 days, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah, thanks, man. That's kind of what we were going for. And Ned's just like a planning master, so he just kind of, I don't know. We took a backseat to it. Like, we told him the direction we wanted the video to be in. He's like, all right, we're going to do this on this day, and then this on this day. And like, it just ended up working out. So I can't take any credit for consolidating that and making it streamlined. That's all Sir Ned.
Yeah.
Killing on that. But I'm happy about it, because I have had the nightmare music videos.
Yeah.
So I've been there, done that. And it's not fun.
Where it's like, okay, you're going to play the same song 5 times in a row, but we're only going to focus in on the singer. All right, now you're going to do the same thing, but we're only the lead guitarist. And like, if you're a band like Whitechapel, where you have like 7 or 8 members, you're like, oh, fuck me.
All right, I'm going to go buy a book and... See you guys tomorrow.
Yeah, really. Jesus Christ. And another thing I actually noticed about your band, and I don't know if it's like a good thing or a bad thing, like, not saying you in general, but like the way the music scene is going, is you guys put out a lot of covers.
Yeah. About that, actually, it was the Royals cover, which was obviously the more popular one.
Mm-hmm.
That just came when, because to date, as far as I know, at least, it's just been the Royals cover and then this Ellie Goulding one that we just did. But the Royals one was because they got the offer from Punk Goes Pop.
Yeah, you can't turn that down.
Exactly. Yeah. So they did that, and I wasn't in the band at the time, so like, I obviously can't say much about that, the process for that. But then we just, obviously there was a huge hiatus after Warped Tour.
Mm-hmm.
When they were looking for a new singer. And the cover, it was actually our manager, Mike Mowry, it was kind of his idea to do a cover song as a way to announce the band, sort of.
Oh, okay.
Like, being back, rather than just, you know, making a post saying, like, hey, we found a new singer and we're back. It was sort of a low-key way to be like, hey, we're back. Here's some material. Hold on for the original stuff.
Okay, so it wasn't like a serious planned out thing type of deal.
No, it was more like a party favor. I mean, we worked really hard on it, but you know, we just wanted to give people something while we were finishing up our original material.
Gotcha. Okay, so you're not going down like the Our Last Night route just yet.
No. But I do think they're awesome. But
yeah, they definitely are awesome. And like, they were basically the first band to actually, you know, get, I don't want to say get famous because of the covers, because they were a pretty popular band right beforehand, but they like solidified themselves as like a touring band and like, you know, this is what we're going to do. And if you like it, great. If you don't, fuck off type of deal.
Yep, exactly. It's a great way to keep putting out content also.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, so it's, yeah, we don't have any plans like that. I mean, I don't think anyone would be opposed to, say, doing another cover during some downtime, like, say, in the middle of an album cycle when we're not going to put out another original song, you know, maybe doing a cover then or something like that. But it's definitely not, like, our goal to be a cover band.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Because, like, I basically see bands like Our Last Night doing covers, and obviously their original stuff is really good too, but it seems to be like doing a cover song is basically like heroin for a band. Like, you know, it feels great at the time doing it and people are going to like it, but like the more you do, the more your fans are going to be like, why didn't you play this cover? I have to hear a shitty original song. And like, that could really destroy a band by just being known as the
good
cover
point.
Band.
Yeah. I never thought of that. That's it's very true.
Yeah, I mean, it screwed up like...
This isn't as good as Nelly's new single.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
an original? What's an original? Jesus, yeah. Why can't you do the new Bieber song? Yeah, but I mean, like, for example, like, you could go with, like, the Ataris as an example, when they just put out Boys of Summer. Like, Boys of Summer fucking catapulted them to, like, another level, even though they were, like, somewhat on the rise. Like, that basically pushed them into, like, a huge band. And then, like, I've been going to, you know, Atari shows here and there, and a lot of people still scream for that cover.
It's, oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like these guys, I don't want to say invented emo, like, with mixed in with pop punk, but they're, like, one of the first. Like, you have Blue Skies, Broken Hearts. Like, that whole record's, like, you know, it's basically, it was a game changer at the time.
Oh, absolutely. And I remember, like, jamming the Ataris so hard when I was probably, like, 14, 15. That was, like, one of my favorite bands. It's like the Ataris and the Brave.
The Brave.
Yeah.
They were Brave. Not the Bravery,
a
right?
Song called like An Honest Mistake.
Oh, that's the Bravery. Okay.
Oh, the Bravery. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, who the fuck is the Brave?
To them, so.
Yeah, what the hell happened to the Bravery?
God, I don't know, dude. They were so good for a while and just kind of fell off the wagon, I guess.
I guess so. Like, I remember seeing them live once. They were, I think they opened the main stage for one of Linkin Park's Project Revolutions, and they were fucking great. I loved them. But next thing you know, like, they came out with the song Believe, I think it was called, and it seemed like a year after that, they just fell off the planet.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's one of those bands that I just never kept following. It was, like, one of those bands that I liked when I was a kid, and then just... you forget about, sort of,
yeah.
Until, like, that one day 20 years down the road where you're like, oh, yeah, I remember this song.
Yeah, yeah. Or you're in an interview with some random publication and you're like, the Bravery, holy fuck, I wasn't thinking of that.
Yep, yeah, exactly. but, yeah, like, just as far as covers go, another thing is I personally think it's kind of – I don't like it when bands play covers live. So that's – if anybody was curious about that. We're not going to be playing that cover live, like, ever, most likely, but
wow, that is interesting.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I think if you go to a band's show, it should be their music, you know, not something, at least the way that I personally view covers. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
and this is sort of something we've talked about as a band. So it's, you know, I'm not just like speaking for myself and going to be like, hey guys, just decided we're not playing the cover.
I'm the lead singer now. Fuck all you.
Yeah. It's like, this was a mutual decision for us, but it's kind of just like, cause they played the Royals on Warped Tour, and it's just one of those things, I guess, that we don't want to become, like you said, like, yeah, we don't want to be a cover band, but we do want to be a band that keeps putting out content. So it's like, you know, The Broken's going to come out, and then we have probably a year and a half, give or take, before our next record is going to be done after
that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so, you know, there's all this space in between, and we want to fill that with, you know, new music. So, you know, whether that be an acoustic performance, a live video, a like doing music videos for songs that were already released, or, you know, maybe doing a cover when we don't have space for any of those other things. Like, it's more so just if we put out a cover, it's because we want to put something out.
Okay. That's an interesting take. A lot of bands, like, you know, they will go out on a tour, they'll be like in a supporting set where they have like five songs and they play, you know, three originals, throw in the cover, and then the most popular song afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I've seen that way too many times.
Yeah. That's definitely a norm.
Yeah. So. But I mean, also, I forgot to mention, you guys have a big show coming up at Webster Hall in November.
Yep. Yeah. On the 17th, I'm flying out to New Jersey on Thursday.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yep. So we'll be practicing for about a week. Everyone else is already out there. So, cause Arvin, our drummer, he lives in Chicago, mm-hmm. and then Chris, our guitarist, lives in New York. So kind of everyone's still a little bit spread out, and the whole band's together right now. And then I come in a couple days later. And yep. And we're just going to like practice until we're dead, and because obviously we've never played a show together. So
wow, so this is gonna be the first one with you.
yep.
Uh-oh. Pressure's on.
It'll be fun. Everybody practices all the time, so you know, we're not worried about it. We'd rather be over the top and practice too much than too little.
Yeah. So now, are we going to be expecting old material at that show, or is it going to be songs strictly off The Broken?
Technically, strictly off The Broken, but okay. There are two songs from the EP that got redone for The Broken, which would be There For You and Love Is a Liar's Game.
Okay.
Yeah, and they got the instrumentals and stuff changed as well, to kind of supplement the whole kind of rock vibe that we're going for. It still sounds like the same song, but they're just little key differences.
Yeah.
But we are going to be playing both of those songs. And then also The Broken, and then two new songs off of the record.
Wow. So the first time people are going to hear those two songs will be at this Webster Hall show.
Yes. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's really exciting for us. But we did want to, since the record's not out yet, and you know, these other singles aren't released yet, we wanted to keep enough familiarity in our set. Mm-hmm. For people who are former fans of the band, you know, to where they have at least three out of the five songs or songs that they're going to be familiar with.
Okay, yeah, that's a great move. Yeah.
Yeah, so it should be really fun. We're all excited to play together, like ecstatic. I've been in the band like probably close to a year now, and it just got announced a couple months ago. So it's been a long process, and we're all kind of breathing a sigh of relief after, you know, everything's rolling out now.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to be like the norm of the way like bands work. Like, you take a band like Avenged Sevenfold, like no one had any idea that Brooks Vockerman was the drummer until, you know, when they announced it. And then you come to find out that he already did an entire album with them, and you had no idea he was in the band.
Yep. And that's actually the same with us, is the entire record was done before I was even announced as the singer.
Wow. How'd you keep that under wraps?
With a lot of self-control. I just wanted to like text everyone I knew and just be like, hey, I'm working on this record. It's really awesome. I'm stoked about it. But I don't know. We were just secretive about it, I guess. And it ended up, for the most part, working out. Like Youth and Revolt, like for some of the stuff got leaked, and you know, we had not any of the music, but we had a lot of people commenting on the Youth and Revolt Facebook and stuff like that, even when it was frozen, saying like, I heard Tanner from Brightwell's new singer and stuff like that.
No, he's not. He's a mediocre singer. He'll never be a part of the band.
Yeah, we would always just, like, we were trying to fire blanket it, and the people from our label were doing that, too, where it's just, you know, any comment like that, we were deleting it, because it's like, yeah, you're right, but shh.
You are a terrible secret holder. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's good that you had self-control. Like, if, you know, if I was the lead singer of this band, I'd be tweeting nothing but, like, clips from the Youth in Revolt movie and, like, just pictures of, like, Michael Cera. Just be like, "You come on, people, I'm dropping you hints here." And they're like, oh, wow, this guy's really gone off the fucking deep end.
Yeah. I think one of the other members of the band, it was either Kenny or Alex, but they got they kept getting, you know, like, hit up by fans and stuff, just being like, "Hey, what are you guys doing now?" and all that. And they'd just always be like, "I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna tweet a lightning bolt," like, for, like, the logo. And yeah. So it was a struggle for everyone. We were like, we are so incredibly proud of this record, and we're, like, absolutely ecstatic to put it out. So, I mean, even now that everything's kind of out in the open, we're still just like, all right, next song. Let's start rolling this stuff out. But
wow.
But yeah. And that being said, also ready to be on the road again, because I don't think anyone has toured for a while now. It's been a couple months, and coming from doing that for half of the year.
Yeah, I mean, there might be a little bit of rust coming back, you know, for the Webster Hall show, but I don't think that much.
You know? Oh, yeah. That's why we want to be safe and give ourselves, I mean, the whole band has, like, 2 weeks together, and then I'm going to have, like, a week with them. So, just because, you know, I can practice on my own, and I had a couple, like, things that I had to do here that, like, kind of prevented me from leaving earlier. But, yeah, we have plenty of practice time to shake off the rust.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun. I'm really, really excited.
I hear you there. So what do you have planned in 2017? I'm guessing a lot of touring for The Broken.
Yep, that's exactly it. And also the only thing that we have, like, solidified as far as plans, you know, it's going to be – touring's obviously going to be a number one priority to support the record. Mm-hmm. And from there, it's just going to be, you know, continuing to create and do what we like to do and putting it out now that we can actually do it. Yeah. So we want to, you know, we're probably going to bring out through these tours, you know, videographers and stuff like that, and do things like acoustic content and be writing the whole time. Like I didn't mention before, but we went into the studio with, like, over 30 pre-production songs.
Oh, wow.
They ended up getting consolidated into the 11 songs for the record, or not even, actually, I guess the 9 songs for the record that didn't kind of exist before.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of writing, because we all strongly believe that this record's great, and we want to start working on the next one immediately to make sure that it's nothing but better. You know?
Yeah, I hear on there. So, I mean, like, going back to that process of having, like, 30 pre-recorded songs, like, ready to go and stuff like that, how do you choose, you know, those 9 songs?
It's a little bit of choosing and a little bit of taking one part from one and putting it in another. But we did, work with some other people. Those pre-pros, they came all from the band completely. And then we ended up going in with, I believe it was, like, Mike Green and Drew Folk and then Taylor Larson, and kind of sitting down, like, with each of them for a couple different songs and sort of reworking things, because a lot of times, you know, if you put so much time into something and are just, you know, if you'll be working on a song for a week and you hear that song every single day for 3 hours a day, it's a lot of the time it's really hard to step back and take, like, a new listener's perspective on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of where a lot of that comes into play. Like, I know Taylor did a lot of reworking for us, where he's like, all right, this is great, but, you know, let's take this bar right here and do something a little bit different.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's so it's yeah. So yeah, it's just we're very avid on wanting to have too much material as opposed to too little, and, you know, go in and kind of cut it down and have people with these fresh ears to almost not pick the songs for us, but really lead us in what they think shines. Because that's what's important, is someone who hasn't heard it. And half the time, more than half the time, like a 95% of the time, that's the call that we would make too if we hadn't been listening to something for every day for 3 weeks.
Okay, wow. All right. So yeah, so it's not like, you know, it's crunch time, you have like a week to go and you have to crank out one more song. Like, you have 8 and you have like 9 ready to go. It's like, ah, damn, I got to write this one. No, you actually, you know, wrote everything out. You basically were prepared for everything, and then you just chose the top songs, or like you took pieces and then, you know, made like steroid songs.
All this stuff, what do we throw away?
Yeah.
So
I mean, that could basically push you into like a deluxe edition of the album.
Yes. Yep. Totally can't say anything about that, but maybe.
You basically just did. All right. We got an exclusive.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man. This was one hell of an interview, man. Thank you for taking the time out to do this on a Sunday, no less.
Hey, no problem at all, dude. Hell, it was fun to talk about this stuff for me, so.
Yeah, definitely. So best of luck with the band. We're going to try to come out on the 17th at Webster Hall. You know, you're playing with basically all your label mates. So you have Chasing Safety, you have Magosh, and then you have
Lorna Shore.
Lorna Shore, which is extremely odd because, you know, you have your sound, then Lorna Shore is like completely opposite.
Yeah, it's like the show from start to finish is just going to be getting progressively heavier. So, but yeah, it should be a really fun show, and it's actually literally all the label mates. So, yeah, it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, it's going to be one hell of a party. So if you guys are in the New York City, New Jersey area, definitely come out for that, especially Tanner's first time playing with Youth in Revolt, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, man.
Yeah.
So before I let you go, what we usually do is we ask the person we're interviewing to basically play us a song out. Do you want me to just go with the Broken to play in its entirety?
Absolutely.
There we go. And the music video is up now on YouTube and also on the band's Facebook, Youth in Revolt Official. You guys are also on Twitter. I'm assuming you're also on Instagram as well.
Yes.
All right. Yep. Basically, right. Just Google Youth in Revolt Band, because that pesky movie keeps popping up.
Good point. That is very true.
There we go. All right, Tanner. It's been a pleasure, man. Enjoy your Sunday.
All right. Thank you so much. You too.
Of course. Later, man.
See you.